This morning, we're going to start off with Will Klinger, who's certainly setting a pace for today. We've got a talk on basically on scheme, but it's also on the CLR, Common Language Runtime. So here's something in our future we have to take a look at. Will has long time been a schemer from the crowd. Where do we all emanate from? From MIT, I guess. He's been an editor of the Scheme Project, and he's been a great hacker. So I'm happy to announce today's Will Klinger, Common Larceny.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Let me take this off. You'll hear me better, man. Both of these URLs are in the paper. The first one directs you to the second one, so the larceny.org is all you have to remember, even if you didn't have the paper. Common larceny is an implementation of Scheme. We're going to start with some shameless marketing, then we're going to go under the hood and talk about how it works. Then we're going to do some casual benchmarking, which I've described here as experimental science. Then I'm going to have a types rant to wake you up in case you're not awake by then. And then we'll conclude with some status. Now, before I go on, I think that we're going to have a happier time here if I adjust this a little bit more for the screen resolution that this projector is forcing me to use. So if you'll bear with me for a few seconds, I'll see if I can tone this down and make things a little bit more fit on each slide. Let's see if that helps a little bit. Okay, Common Larceny is an implementation of R5RS schemes for the Common Language Runtime that Microsoft has as part of .NET. Alpha versions are currently available for download from these websites. It implements all of Scheme and interoperates with other .NET languages. It's based on a compiler. The interoperability works by compiling to IL, just like all other .NET languages. We communicate with other languages, which have a rather different semantics, using the Java.NET notation, which was invented by the late Ken Anderson and by Tim Dickey, who built JScheme. So it uses a special lexical syntax to indicate that you're trying to talk to other languages. It uses reflection to generate the interfaces to those languages. It does that just in time. As you request and as you create an interface, it generates it and caches the results. It generates code to marshal the arguments and results automatically. There are a few bugs in that right now, but the principle is working. It's just a matter of nailing down a few odd bugs that are left. And it does allow scheme procedures as callbacks, which are necessary in the .NET framework, and various other things. So you can do quite a bit with it. Skip past the slide, but that's just as well. This is an example of C# syntax for creating a hash table and then asking whether it contains a certain key. Here, here's the scheme code to do exactly the same thing. The dot at the end of this indicates that this is a constructor. So that's part of the java.syntax, and we're calling that constructor with an argument of 100. This here is what in C# you would write as ht.containsKey of key. So the name of the method is .containsKey. We just made that dot part of the method name, and then the first argument is the receiver of the message. And so this syntax is the java.syntax, and you can see how it works, and the details are in the paper, probably not about to go through here talk. The implementation is compiler-based, using my 2-bit compiler, which I'll talk more about here in a little bit. We compile to Microsoft's intermediate language, which is then JIT compiled to native code by the Common Language Runtime, or by other implementations of that architecture. Common Larceny can construct standard .NET apps. We haven't been doing much. We haven't done any of that yet that I know of, but it can be done. How do I know? Well, that's an interesting question. We can construct loadable FASL files. So now to the part, that's the end of the shameless marketing. So if you've lived through that, then you're through the tough part. Now we're going to look under the hood and talk about the larceny project. We're going to look at how common larceny is implemented. We're not going to look at how Javadoc is implemented. There are a few sentences about that in the paper, but that's actually, I think the sentences, if you're a hacker, those sentences will tell you most of what needs to be done. It's a lot of work, especially when you start dealing with all the, you know, all the system aggravations that you run into when you build a real system. But the basic principle is described in the paper, and if you're willing to work through the bugs that you encounter along the way, that's how it's done. The Larceny Project has built several research quality implementations of Scheme. They share a single standard library, which is mostly written in Scheme. They share an optimizing compiler called 2Bit, and there are three separate backends for the three implementations in the project. The original implementation is called Larceny. It generates native Spark code and runs only on the Spark architecture. Petty Larceny is a more portable implementation. It generates portable C code, and you rely on the GCC compiler to compile that. Petty Larceny can also accept a drop-in native code generator, which we'll talk about. We'll see some benchmarks for that later on. And then Common Larceny is the third implementation in this family. It generates intermediate language for the Common Language Runtime and .NET. The point I want to make now is that all three of these implementations are almost exactly the same. The only real difference between these implementations is in the backend to the compiler. The Scheme libraries are the same, except for a very small number of system dependencies. The front end of the compiler is the same, except for a small number of tables that guide the compiler, tell how many registers there are, and so forth. So the differences between these systems are all implied, or all caused by the backend. Excuse me, by the target machine. So here's an example of compilation in 2-bit. I'll go through this quicker than you can really understand it, because most of this is in the paper, and if you want to understand it, you're going to have to look at the paper anyway. So here's a little generator of test data that's used in the sorting benchmark. It generates a list of n items, each of which is a fixed num chosen randomly between 0 and m, half inclusive. So this is typical Scheme syntax, and either you understand it by now or it would take too long for me to explain it. That gets the front end of the compiler turns that into this anormal form, which again is not very interesting, but I'll point out a few things. Lambda lifting has added an extra argument to the loop procedure, which was implied by the name let in the original source code. In the anormal form, all of the intermediate quantities are named. That's why you've got things like T2, T5, T7. And some of those intermediate quantities really need to be in registers, otherwise we're going to have an unnecessary register move. And so the temporary that's generated for them has been renamed to the appropriate register. So this is a compiler that uses Scheme itself, a stylized subset of Scheme, as its intermediate language for as long as possible, which is one of the things that makes it a fairly easy compiler to maintain and to improve. Eventually, though, it turns it into code for a hypothetical Mac Scheme machine, which you see here. And this code is slightly different for the different architectures because of the tables that guide its generation. But this is basically an accumulator plus general register machine. It's not a stack machine, but we have, well, I guess that's just enough I have to say. Then the backends take this and translate it to the real target machine. And so if we're translating to Spark machine code, we'll get this, which I won't spend a whole lot of time discussing. If we're translating to portable C, we'll get this, which is just a bunch of calls to C preprocessor macros, which mimic the semantics of each of those, or implement the semantics of each of those Mac Scheme machine instructions. And if we're compiling to Microsoft's IL, we do basically the same thing, except we don't have a macro preprocessor, so we use calls to static methods where we can, hoping that the Microsoft assembler will inline those calls. And where we can't use static calls, we generate the actual IL instructions. Anyway, that's a mess. Now we get to the interesting part of the talk. We all know and love Lisp and Scheme because they are weird. They are purely object-oriented languages in the sense that every value is first class. All values are objects. They may not be objects in the sense that object-oriented people think of objects, but they are first class objects in our language. These languages perform integer arithmetic, which is unusual. They have control structures, which are unusual. They also have block structure, at least, yes, they have block structure. And Scheme guarantees an asymptotic space complexity property known as proper tail recursion. Now, the JVM and the CLR are also weird, but if you're a Lisp or Scheme hacker, they are weird in less desirable ways. These red dots here, you probably can't tell, but each of these red dots is a paintball that has hit its target and gone splat. And so this is pronounced as a postfix operator, and so feel free to join in. These target machines cannot represent a union of value and reference types, splat. They have a simple try-catch model for exceptions, splat. Managed code cannot inspect the control stack, splat. There is no support for block structure, splat. And the JVM has no support for tail calls, splat. But the Common Language Runtime does. So that's one difference between the JVM and the CLR. Otherwise, they're very similar. So why does this matter? Let's start out by looking at integer arithmetic, which is one of the things that Lisp and Scheme have, Common Lisp and Scheme have in common. If, suppose you want to add x and 1, not an uncommon thing to want to do. On the Spark, here's the code that Larceny would generate. There are two dynamic instructions and some other instructions that get involved if x is simply is something other than a fixed number. On other machines, it might take more instructions, but you can rest assured that on every machine that the implementers are going to spend a lot of time trying to make sure this runs. They've got pretty close to the optimal instruction sequence for this. This code works as well as it does because fixed nums and big nums are chosen to have appropriate representations. We divide the world of exact integers into fixed nums and big nums, and on the Spark, fixed nums have zeros in the two low-order bits, and big nums are tagged pointers with a 3-bit tag in the low-order bits. The details of the representation don't matter, but the point is, what we have here is what, in Microsoft's terminology, is a value value, and what we have here is a reference value. And so, looking at it from a more mathematical point of view, from the context of domain theory, the integer type is the co-product of fixed num and big num, that is the sum or union or variant record of those two types. The number type in Scheme is the co-product of fixed num, big num, float num, rat num, comp num, and complex types. And some of these are value types and some of these are reference types. In general, in purely object-oriented languages, not just Lisp and Scheme, but also in Smalltalk and other similar languages, even curl. An object is the co-product of Boolean, character, number, array, record, procedure, and no doubt some other stuff. So we cannot represent that in the common type system that Microsoft has given us. And so we have to encode this co-product in some way. Fortunately, co-products can be encoded as products. And the particular coding that we are using is we are making every value an instance of a particular class called Scheme Object, or actually not called Scheme Object, but I'm going to lie to you a little bit today. Some of the instances of this class are allocated, so we don't have to allocate them at runtime. Booleans, the most common characters, and small integers. And that's the representation we're currently using, although very little of the system actually depends on that. This has some unfortunate consequences for interoperability. Interlanguage calls are going to require data translation. Splat. Well, we don't like that. Standard debuggers are going to display Booleans and numbers as pointers. Splat. Moving on to the control structures, these three languages here, and I could list others as well, but these three suffice. Common Lisp has continuable exceptions. Smalltalk has block contexts. Scheme has first-class continuations. All of these control structures pose essentially the same problems to the implementer, or very similar problems. Let's focus on Scheme, since that's what we actually implemented. In Scheme, continuations can become objects. They aren't always objects, and that's one of the reasons we can implement them efficiently, but they can become objects through use of the reifying call with current continuation procedure. Now that means that the control stack can't just be a stack. The usual strategy for implementing continuations involves, at times, walking the control stack. We can't walk the CLR control stack, so we cannot use the CLR control stack at all. At least so we thought when we were designing the system. There are a few interesting words in the paper about that. Joe Marshall over here and a few other people have since discovered a way we could have used the control stack. That's enough. I won't try to get into that. Anyway, we thought, and this is pretty close to being true, that we must implement our own instead, because even Joe's idea and would have been a little bit weird. And what this means is that we cannot use the standard CLR calling language. So those are gotchas, all of those. And this has some gotchas for interoperability. Interlanguage, from Scheme to C#, for example, and intra-language calls, Scheme to Scheme, for example, must use two different calling conventions. That means that standard debuggers will not display the Scheme control stack because they don't know about it, and they didn't foresee the need to have the programming language tell the debugger about a separate control stack. And this means that standard debuggers will not work properly when tracing or stepping the Scheme code. As for block structure, that was not a real problem for us. It is a problem for some implementers, but it wasn't a problem for us because our 2-bit compiler already performs lambda lifting and closure conversion, which effectively turns most non-global variables into local variables. So it gets rid of most of the block structure anyway. And any non-local variables that remain, any non-global variables that remain will be allocated on the heap. That's one of the reasons 2-bit is a fairly simple compiler given the degree of optimization in it. Proper tail recursion was not a problem for us because we can't use the standard calling convention anyway, and so we have to roll our own, and we might as well roll a properly tail recursive calling convention. Once upon a time, we used the tail dot modifier for all calls, including non-tail calls, which was hardly what Microsoft intended when they gave it to us. We have since switched to a trampoline. Since the paper was written, we are now using a trampoline, which seems to be a little bit faster. The tail dot modifier was fairly slow. Of course, that might change in a future version of the Microsoft's implementation. So now we've got to the casual benchmarks, and of course, I want to start out by reminding everybody that there are three kinds of lies. And benchmarks are the third. Benchmarks usually compare apples and oranges, which is not a scientifically fruitful enterprise. There are too many differences. And you get different numbers, but so what? What do those different numbers mean? And all a benchmark really means, when you get right down to it, most of the time anyway, is that system X runs benchmark B at a certain speed, whereas system Y runs benchmark B at a certain speed, all of that on machine M. If you change the machine, or if you change the benchmark, you're making these slight changes like that, then these timings that you got have very little predictive value. So you need to look at a lot of benchmarks, and you need to control as many variables as you can. We have done that here. Not that that was a goal of this research. This wasn't actually viewed as research. This was viewed as, well, Larceny was viewed as research, but Conn Larceny was viewed as an implementation project. But nonetheless, we wound up with three systems that are virtually identical except for the target machine. So we actually can begin to draw some conclusions about the suitability of these target machines for Scheme, not for other languages probably. And we can't draw too big a conclusion even about Scheme because, well, we've got all sorts of weird design choices that we had to make when we were designing Conn Larceny, and had we made some of those choices differently, timings might turn out different. So all of these are disclaimers, warnings about what you're about to see. So that said, I'm now about to give you some... I'm actually not going to give you numbers. I'm going to give you relative performance. So the longer the bar, the better, the faster it runs. Let me explain the implementations we're benchmarking first. Oh, before we do that, let's explain all the benchmark machine, which is the IBM ThinkPad that is on that chair over there. Now, that's not exactly true, as I'll say in a moment, but think of that as the benchmark machine. That is a 2.8 gigahertz Pentium processor, but it's a laptop. It's not as fast as a comparable desktop machine might be. The systems we're benchmarking are petty larceny with a drop-in native code generator written by Lars Hansen, who wrote larceny and petty larceny as well. So he also has written a native code generator for the Intel Pentium. And this first row shows the performance of that system. The next row shows the performance of petty larceny generating C code and letting GCC generate the native code. Otherwise, it's the same as petty native. Common larceny is the system I've been describing. The line labeled common larceny uses intermediate language generated under version 1.1 of the CLR and executing under version 1.1 of the CLR. There is now a beta 2 version of the CLR out, and we have rerun exactly that same IL under beta 2. That is, we're using IL that was compiled under 1.1, but we're running it under beta 2. And then on the same machine, to give you some idea of what these numbers mean, we're not just comparing to ourselves, give you some idea of how we compare to systems you might otherwise think of using. We're comparing it to two systems in the PLT scheme family, which is also based at Northeastern University, and was supervised in part by Matthias Gleisen, who was involved with this project, and so no hard feelings if we compare it to MIS scheme and Doctor scheme. So MIS scheme and Doctor scheme share the same execution engine, which is an interpreter. It's a fairly fast interpreter. MIS scheme, the line for MIS scheme actually means that interpreter with debugging stuff turned off. And the Doctor scheme line actually means that interpreter with debugging turned on. Debugging off is the default for MIS scheme, and debugging on is the default for Doctor scheme. But you can make MIS scheme run as slowly as Doctor scheme by turning debugging on, and you can make Doctor scheme run as fast as MIS scheme by turning debugging off. So anyway, that's what these lines mean. Finally, two more disclaimers. Petty native and petty larceny are dynamic loading is not currently working on that under Windows XP, which is what that machine's running. So we actually ran those under a Linux box. And then we also ran MIS scheme and Doctor scheme on that same Linux box. And we said MIS scheme on that Linux box, if we set that equal to MIS scheme on that laptop, and then normalize the timings that we got for these other two systems, then we can sort of pretend that these two systems will run on that laptop. So there's a normalization process here that I want you to be aware of. These first two were actually run on a Linux box and the timings normalized. Okay, so here's the relative performance of the systems, and as you would expect, the native code generator does best, generating C code, letting GCC deal with the native code, comes pretty close, and there's a pretty good fall off when we go to common larceny because it relies on the JIT compiler, the IL assembler and the JIT compiler that Microsoft provide. And who knows, Microsoft may improve that performance quite a bit in the future. We may find ways that things that we're doing that are really stupid, and we may be able to improve the performance of common larceny ourselves in the future, but this is how it was running a week ago. A couple of other things to say. This right here, this timing for the performance of Doctor scheme is about 10 times as fast as a Symbolics 3600. It's about the same performance as a Cray 1 on the TAC benchmark. So you can take that into account. The numbers for petty native that we actually ran on the Linux box are about 400 times as fast as a Symbolics 3600, or about 40 times as fast as a Cray 1. So you have to realize there are a lot of people in the world who are actually quite content with the performance of Doctor scheme. They find that a Cray 1 is fast enough. Hardware, it's a wonderful thing. Anyway, so that's that. Here's a sort benchmark that sorts a million fixnums using the less than or equal to sort. And here, common larceny was a little bit faster than MIS scheme. Down here, common larceny is a little bit slower than MIS scheme. Roughly the same performance, which is what we told you in the paper. So I want you to see that what I said in the paper wasn't a lie, although the paper doesn't actually contain any relative performance of common larceny. It was so unsettled when I wrote the paper, I wanted to save that for the talk and be a little bit more certain and run more benchmarks. So here are a couple more. These are up-to-date versions of the Boyer benchmark from the Gabriel suite. TAC is also from the Gabriel suite. In Boyer, gets rid of the property lists from the Boyer benchmark, which are not standard in Scheme. And if you run the original Boyer benchmark, as I translated it into Scheme, you wind up, in effect, testing the performance of property lists, which I don't think was the point of the benchmark. So I rewrote the benchmark so it no longer uses property lists. I also fixed a number of bugs that Henry Baker pointed out. The original Gabriel version of Boyer actually computes the wrong answer, for example. And I added a scaling parameter, which is maybe the most important change. The original Boyer benchmark is just not enough computation on the current machine. So we've got an exponential scaling parameter. In Boyer, 0 corresponds to the original Boyer benchmark. So we've got a scaling parameter of 4, which is roughly 3 to the 4 times as big a computation as the original Boyer. And then Henry Baker also devised a shared Kanzing Boyer benchmark. And so S Boyer is exactly the same as N Boyer, but with that shared Kanzing tweak that Henry Baker invented. So both of these now become more interesting benchmarks if you make these changes. And common larceny does a little bit better than this scheme on that, but you see the pattern. It's not as fast as generating C code. It's not as fast as generating native code. 4 more benchmarks on this set of machines. The conform benchmark was written by Jim Miller, who was one of the architects of the CLR. The graphs benchmark may have been written by Jim Miller, but I'm a little bit confused on that. The graphs benchmark is very much a higher order benchmark. It allocates or creates a zillion closures, where I'm being a little bit fuzzy about what a zillion means. I don't remember the exact number, but it creates a large number of closures. And conform, so graphs is enumerating a bunch of directed graphs, and conform is doing something with propositional lattices, as far as I can tell. I think they're type lattices, actually. And so on these two benchmarks, common larceny does not perform quite as well as this scheme, but at least it's still in the same ballpark. The main thing is the pattern continues. Finally, we get to the last two benchmarks, a non-deterministic finite automaton implemented in Scheme using the idiomatic technique of defining a bunch of local procedures that call each other. Sometimes they're tail calls, sometimes they're non-tail calls. Most of them are probably tail calls in this particular benchmark. And that turns into very efficient native code. And so the native code compiler does really well because all those tail calls just turn into jumps. And it's really nice idiom and scheme. And it's very efficient when you compile the native code. But if you compile C, the trampoline takes away a lot of performance. So it's not so much on this benchmark that these four systems perform worse, any worse than before. It's more like the native code generator really wins on this. Nucleic 2 is the only floating point benchmark I'm going to show you. The whole larceny family has poor performance for floating point. All floating point is performed using boxed flow nums. That is, we allocate heap storage for every flow num operation. And we know how to get rid of that. I mean, that's not rocket science. We've got the type inference in the 2-bit compiler to get rid of that, but we're not doing anything with that information in code generation time. So right now, the flow num performance is poor. Someday we can fix that, but right now it's poor. This is the only benchmark in which the beta 2 version of the CLR does significantly worse than the version 1.1. And we actually know the reason for that. We don't know the reason for all the other stuff, but we actually know the reason, or at least most of the reason for this. And it is that exceptions, setting up an exception handler was moderately fast in version 1.1. Throwing an exception wasn't very fast, but it wasn't deadly. Well, in beta 2, throwing an exception is deadly. And so our flow num code, if you trap out of the fix num case and go into the more complicated case, you may have to go into Scheme. Who knows what's going to happen? It's fairly complicated. And so when we implemented it, we took the lazy man's way out. And when we finished the computation, we just do a throw to get back to the where we started the operation. And that just turns out to bite the bag in beta 2, and we're going to have to re-implement that code to get rid of that problem. So that's what's going on with that benchmark. Now, because we're not just talking about common larceny here, I'm actually pretending to do legitimate science. I'm going to show you some more benchmarks that were run on a different machine, the Spark, where you see a much larger difference between the performance of native code generated by larceny and the performance of the C code generated by petty larceny. Here, on the TAC benchmark, larceny is over twice as fast as petty larceny. On the SWORD benchmark, again, larceny is over twice as fast as petty larceny. I'm introducing a couple new implementations here. Both SHA scheme and larceny compile directly to native code. Native code all the time, direct. Petty larceny and chicken compile to C code. Now, chicken is a one-person project, so it doesn't have the level of engineering that petty larceny has, although petty larceny was largely a one-person project, I have to say. So we've got two compilers that compile to C, two compilers that compile to native code, and the pattern is compiling to native code is faster. I'm not going to say that's always faster. Stalin, for example, compiles to C and generates very good code, but it doesn't try too hard to conform to the scheme standard, so it takes some shortcuts. All of these languages, SHA scheme, larceny, and chicken, do a pretty good job of implementing the scheme standards. And so the same pattern on NBoyer and SBoyer, and because I don't want to run short on time, I want to rant about types a little bit. I think I'm going to let that be it, the benchmarks. Excuse me, the experimental science. I lied to you. I'll show you the rest of the benchmarks. The pattern continues. The native code generators do better. Oh, SHA scheme is missing a benchmark here. That's not SHA scheme's fault. The benchmark is written a little weirdly, and that's to blame. And finally, the NFA and the floating point benchmark. And again, chicken is the timing is missing because GCC actually runs for over an hour on the C code that chicken generates, and then it throws a segmentation fault. All right, now for my types rant. This particular community, the Lisp community, I've noticed over the years. I've been a part of this community over the years, believe it or not. I've noticed over the years that this particular community tends to see types in terms of dynamic versus static types. And I want to say that's a false dichotomy. I actually want to stand here. I actually want to see if I can get out of this room alive after saying that strong type is good.
Get him.
It's strong arm typing that's bad. So I want to make a distinction between strong typing and strong arm typing. Expressive versus restrictive types is what matters. So, let's talk about what makes a type system expressive. All types are first-class types. You need that. Now, what that means is that all types can be passed as arguments to the type constructors. And the type constructors that are most important are the function type constructors, the product type constructor, which gives you records or whatever you want to call them. The coproduct type constructor, which gives you disjoint sums or variants or unions or whatever you want to call them. So you need to have a function type constructor, you need to have a product type constructor, you need to have a coproduct type constructor. Any type should be legal as an argument to those constructors. You also want a universal type, which is a supertype of all types, that induces a subtyping relationship in ways that depend partly on whether your language is imperative or functional and stuff like that. So I don't want to get into details, but it does induce a subtyping relationship, and there are several ways you can do that. Finally, you want universally and existentially quantified type schemes. Type scheme is a weasel phrase, meaning these don't have to be types, but you want something type-like. Because if you try to make these types, your type system can get very hairy. So these don't actually have to be legal as arguments to the type constructors. That's basically what I'm saying. Universally quantified type schemes give you parametric polymorphism, as in standard ML, the generics of ADA, C++, whatever name you know them by. Those are important. And existentially quantified type schemes give you abstract data types, that is, types whose representation is hidden from other parts of the program. And you don't always want those, but there are times when you actually do want those. Oh, before I go on, let's consider Java. In Java, not all types are first-class types. There are some types, well, maybe they're all first-class types and there just aren't very many types. That's another way of looking at it. Java does not have a function type constructor. You have to fake function types using these classes or something. It does have a product type constructor, namely classes. It doesn't have a coproduct type constructor, but there is a standard way of creating coproducts, that is, disjoint sums or variants. But it doesn't work for all types. It only works for reference types. And there is no universal type in Java. there is object, but that's not a universal type. Int is not a subtype of object. Integer is, but not int. And Java does not have, or did not have, universally inaccessible quantified typescripts. They've added a weak form of universally quantified typescripts in the latest versions. Now, I want to say that this matters. Now, some people will say this doesn't matter. This is abstract mathematical nonsense. But I think the Java people have come to realize that this does matter. The fact that int and integer both have to be in the language. It didn't start out that way. That was an add-on. And Java programmers actually complain about this. And it causes problems in the universally quantified when you try to add generics. It makes things worse. It's just not as smooth as you'd like it to be. So not many Java programmers will argue with you on this. But think back to Pascal. Once upon a time, Pascal was, there was Fortran, and there was COBOL, which was an advance over Fortran. There were other languages that were advanced over COBOL. And one of those was Pascal. And Pascal sort of ruled the roost for a while in academic circles. And when people like Brian Kernighan said the type system of Pascal is a real pain in the neck, the Pascal weenies would say, no, it's not a problem. If you have a problem with it, it just means you don't know how to program. It's really okay. It's good enough. And so, of course, Pascal was replaced by C. And so I want to argue that this stuff does matter. And so let's take one example. I've mentioned this before. Microsoft's common type system cannot express coproducts. Splat. That's a gotcha. Fortunately, coproducts can be encoded as products, and we've done that in common larceny. We had to in order to implement the scheme. But there are many different ways to encode coproducts. And when all sorts of different implementations, if Franz comes out with an implementation and they encode coproducts differently than we do in Scheme, that's going to be a barrier to interoperability. So all these languages that have coproducts, if Microsoft doesn't tell us the standard way of encoding coproducts, or even better, support coproducts directly in their common type system, then every language implementer is going to have to design their own encoding, and these languages are not going to be able to talk to each other as well as they should, which is supposed to be the point of the, I mean, that's what the word common means in common language runtime, or at least that's what it's supposed to be. So this really is a problem, and if some C-sharp weenie tells you it's not, then, well, actually, the C-sharp weenies I've talked to have told me that, and they haven't claimed that it's not a problem, they've just told me that Lisp and Scheme and Smalltalk and languages like that aren't important enough to matter, which, I'm sorry, I just wasn't convinced by that argument. Status of common larceny. We've got an alpha version available for download at our website. It runs on the common language runtime. It is beginning to turn over on Rotor and Mono. There are still some bugs in the java.marshalling that we will get around to fixing here pretty soon. Some of the demos that we're currently shipping are broken. I apologize for that. But let me... These actually, some of these should be gotchas rather than cool things. But on that laptop over here, Joe Marshall sitting in the front row can demonstrate the current system. And the other day, or actually yesterday, I guess it was, or the day before, he took the substance of the talk that Alex Peake gave and re-implemented it in common larceny in less than a day. And he can demonstrate that for you here during the break if you'd like to see that. So it is stable enough to do something significant, something that was considered significant to deserve a paper in this conference. Speaking of break, yes. So anyway, compilation is currently inconvenient. 6 months ago, you basically had to edit some files and recompile the entire system in order to compile, say, the Envoyer benchmark and run it. Here is what you currently have to do to compile and run the Envoyer 4 benchmark. So it's a little bit less wizardly than before, but this is not really what you want people to have to do to compile a file. What you really want them to do is something more like this, and we will get there. This is just a matter of engineering getting to here from there. So, this is the larceny gang. These are the people who brought you common larceny. That's Matthias Velison on the left, Joe Marshall, Felix Clark, Dale Valancourt, Ryan Culpepper, myself, and Lars Hansen, who wrote more code on this than anybody else. I couldn't find a picture for him, but he's certainly a knight of the Landau calculus, so he's symbolized by this thing here. And we're the larceny gang. Do we have a scheme for you? We have time for questions. Take five. Five questions. 5 minutes. Any questions? Yes.
Why larceny?
It was Lars Hansen's implementation of Scheme. scheme, and you get to say that a whole lot. As you turn it into Lars's implementation scheme, and you start to say that a whole lot, it starts sounding like larceny, and it was inevitable. Yes?
Those benchmarks, your experimental science, what did you do to warm up the JIT cache for putting the common larceny words?
Microsoft's Common Language Runtime, at least as they've explained it to me, does the JIT compilation on loading. When you load the IL, it's a JIT compile. So it's not like what's often done in Java systems.
Okay.
Now, the Beta 2 might be different about that, and that might be one of the things we're seeing. There was a follow-up on that, and I'll get to it. Did you want to say something about that?
Not really a follow-up. This is so inconvenient to express all these different things in the CLR runtime. Are you providing all this feedback to Microsoft? Because I understand that what they developed is just not adequate.
I think that direction is better directed at Microsoft. We are providing feedback to Microsoft. I will say that. John?
This thing about the debugger package and the limits of the CLR debugger, does that thing have macros? I mean, if it does, even GDB and all the predecessors, ADB had macros so that you could intercept at least.
It is partially programmable. I have gone to some trouble to talk to people at Microsoft about this, and they've basically told me that it's not programmable enough to do what we need to do. But it is programmable. It's supposed to be programmable enough to deal with different programming languages, type systems, but they did not anticipate people doing as much weird stuff as we are doing. And so we are probably stuck with regard to the current Visual.NET debugger. Other questions?